Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, January 9th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Crothers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be diving into the city's recent bird-friendly city certification from Nature Canada, the opening of Kingston's first queer bar after a nearly 20-year drought, the Wolf Islander 3's return to service, and more. The City of Kingston has officially received an entry-level bird-friendly city certification from Nature Canada. To obtain a bird-friendly city status, a municipality must earn points across three categories: threat reduction, habitat protection, restoration and climate resilience, and community reach and education. Certification is awarded on one of three levels: entry, intermediate, or high. The city established a bird team about a year ago to work towards making Kingston more bird safe. Notably, the city held a public poll to name an official bird this past fall, a lively race which ended in a tie between the cardinal and the crow. According to the city, Kingston's application received strong marks, bordering on the intermediate level. Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the city, sat down with CFRC to share more about the city's bird-friendly status. I was wondering if you could just tell us a bit about the city's bird team and the work that's gone into this to get us here.
Yeah, so the city started working on their bird-friendly certification about a year ago. We have a bird-friendly team, which is we've got some very active people on the team. The team consists of some community groups like Little Forests, Master Gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists, Sustainable Kingston. It includes people from Queens and St. Lawrence. It includes some representation from some different Indigenous groups. So it's a very active team. And we worked together to pull together an application, and the application really looked at a number of different things. It looked at threat reduction. It looked at how to conserve and restore and create bird habitats, and it looked at how do we engage the public. So the city worked on that, but the team also worked together. So the team came together. They did three World Migratory Bird Days this year. One of the groups had got a grant to run one of those migratory world bird days where they did a hedge seminar. So they taught people how to plant hedges, which were great for birds populations as well. So lots of stuff has gone into it. Our application went in. We were certified at the entry level, but we were like 1 point short of intermediate level. So our bird team is working really hard right now to make sure we can gain that point and move us up to an intermediate level for next year.
Awesome. And you just mentioned there, bird team has no plans of stopping. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about what's in the works and maybe what we're going to see in 2026.
Yeah, so 2026, we actually have a meeting coming up in February to talk about what our goals are going to be for next year. I think what you will probably see is some stuff on light pollution that we'll be working on, some stuff on bird window collisions that we'll be working on. And possibly some stuff in Roman cats. There's a lot that's also happening with the city. So right now the city is working on their official plan. We're working on our natural heritage study. We're working on our forestry management strategy. Out of that will also come our tree bylaw. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happening at the city that will go into that conserve, restore, create bird habitat sections of the report. And hopefully we'll see some changes in that in the next year as well.
Awesome. And what can residents do to contribute and keep up with all these developments?
We have a new bird-friendly page on the city's website, which talks about all these different areas and gives residents some ideas of things that they could do to help support birds as well. So we encourage people to take a look at that. Other things they can do is just, you know, making sure they're creating habitat for trees, not letting cats roam. If they're leaving out food, understanding where that best is to go and what quality of food people should be putting out. Lots of things they can do, lots of ideas on our website. Lots of work also with Little Forests, Master Gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists. They're always working on things to do with birds, plants. So anyone who's looking to be involved, that's an excellent avenue as well to join in with the community and work on some of these activities with us.
Once again, that was Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the City of Kingston. As Santigi said, the city and their bird team look forward to setting new goals and advancing Kingston's status as a bird-friendly city next year. Learn more about the city's bird-friendly city activities and how to make your home a bird-friendly space at cityofkingston.ca/bird-friendly. For the first time since 2009, Kingston has a dedicated queer bar once again. Announced just after the new year, Bottoms Up officially opened its doors on Saturday, January 3rd, taking over the former University Tavern space in the basement of the Renaissance. I stopped by the bar this week to speak with owner Paul Fortier about this new endeavor.
What made you go, Kingston needs this and we're going to be the ones to do it?
I mean, Dennis, my partner and I, Dennis and I, we've been in Kingston since 1994. We operated the restaurants at Fort Henry, the public house downtown. We've been here at Renaissance for 20 years, including the backyard patio since the pandemic. And this was University Tavern, and we would have dance parties, you know, maybe not every weekend, but at least one dance party a week during the student session. But there's just so much competition for dance parties too, that we found that that crowd was, it was really hard to attract a crowd, even that this much further off of the beaten path from the hub. So we said, well, what can we do with this space? And that's going to be unique. That's going to have a niche market and be something that we're good at doing, because we've been hosting Pride events or events for the LGBT community really since the 90s, at a time when other venues wouldn't do it, because you know, it was just too controversial, unfortunately, to even think that it should have been controversial. But there were places that wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole 20 years ago. And we were very happy to accommodate, because, I mean, Dennis and I are both part of the gay community and have, and you know, clearly. And we've been around, we've been to gay bars all of our lives, and have been in the food and beverage business for 40 years now. And we said, you know, let's take this space and see. It's been since 2009, since Chez Fufu, I mean, this is well before your time, since Chez Fufu closed. And that was really the last dedicated sort of LGBTQ space that we had in the city. And it was sad to see that close. But, I mean, times change. You know, most clubs and bars, it's, you know, accept anyone, and the gay community is welcome anywhere these days, where they weren't even 25, 30 years ago. But it's still nice to have a space that, you know, is dedicated to your community, where you can really let your hair down and just be yourself. And we're happy to bring one back to Kingston after 20 years almost.
As Forte mentioned, while Kingston has long been home to LGBTQ plus events and inclusive venues, it hasn't had a specifically queer bar since Chez Fufu closed its doors 17 years ago. While rumors of replacements to fill the gap have come and gone over the years, Bottoms Up is the first to make it a reality. Despite only having a few days' notice, the community response was immediate, with around 120 attendees at opening night.
And you got a bit into your opening night there. How was that? And in general, how's the community response been since you opened this past weekend?
You know what? It's been really, really positive. And not just the allies and friends who I've known in the community for many, many years have sent words of, you know, good wishes, hoping that things go well. And it is, you know, it is somewhat controversial. It's a little bit controversial that even in today, in this day, which is unfortunate that that needs to be the case. But still, I said to myself, at this point in my life, I'm happy to bring something with this space at Renaissance and here, Bottoms Up, in the lower salon, to bring it to the community and let's enjoy it. And I really am... I'm encouraged at the response we had just with only a few days of advertising that we were opening. Really no one knew until after New Year's that this was planned. And for on the 3rd of January to have such a strong crowd show up was really, really encouraging.
I was wondering if you could paint a picture of that night a little bit and how it was for you guys.
Well, of course, no one knew what was going to happen. And it wasn't like it was a party by invitation. So we had, you know, a few people would say they're going to come by, but you never know. There was, you know, nothing firm. But right from 7 o'clock, people were coming through the door, and by 8:30. It was a great crowd. And by 10 o'clock, the place was full and people were wanting to dance. And we got the dancing started at about 10:30, 10:45. So it was, I was surprised to be honest. I didn't know what to expect. And the staff as well, didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And they were very pleased at the response.
Looking ahead, Fortier says he's optimistic that the momentum will continue, especially with students returning to Kingston after the holiday break and discovering the space for the first time.
Of course, we opened at a time when the students weren't here. You know, there were very few students in the city last weekend. But this weekend, you know, people are coming back. And the next couple of weekends, people are coming back and looking for different experiences, I think, too. And I've already had lots of communications with some young people from the university, from the colleges who are, you know, excited about coming and seeing what the space is all about.
The Wolf Islander 3 is back in service after weeks of disruption, but uncertainty around the future of ferry service remains. The disruption began December 22nd, when the Ministry of Transportation halted service on the Wolf Islander 4 due to what it described as a mechanical issue. In a statement at the time, the ministry said the ferry would be out of service while staff worked to resolve the problem. To keep the route running, the Quinte Loyalist and the Amherst Islander 2 were brought in to cover trips between the island and Kingston. The Amherst Islander 2 carried vehicles and passengers during the day, while the Quinte Loyalist handled walk-on passengers overnight. On Tuesday, January 6th, the ministry announced the Wolf Islander 3 had completed a dry dock inspection in Hamilton and had begun its return to Kingston. The following night, Wednesday, January 7th, the vessel officially returned to service, relieving both replacement ferries and restoring a 60-minute round-trip schedule between the Kingston and Marysville docks. For many island residents, the return of the Wolf Islander 3 was met with relief. On the Wolf Island Ferry Updates and Issues Facebook page, users welcomed back Old Faithful and expressed frustration with the reliability of the newer Wolf Islander 4. While service has stabilized for now, questions remain unanswered. The Ministry of Transportation has not provided a timeline for when the Wolf Islander 4 will return to service, or whether the two ferries will operate together once repairs are complete. In its most recent update, the ministry repeated only that staff will continue to work diligently to bring the Wolf Islander 4 back into service as soon as possible. The boats may be moving again, but the long-term plan still seems unclear. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today with CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, January 9th, daytime high of 4 degrees, feeling closer to zero, so just hovering around freezing, with some periods of rain in the morning, otherwise it'll be gray and cloudy. Saturday, January 10th, daytime high of 4 degrees, feeling closer to zero, so very little temperature movement from Friday into Saturday. 55% chance of rain in the afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Sunday, January 11th, daytime high of 2 degrees, but it's actually going to feel closer to minus 6, possibility of a little bit of snow in the afternoon. And then Monday, January 12th, daytime high of minus 1, but feeling closer to minus 10, quite chilly here in the city of Kingston. This is a truncated City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Nothing much to report, but I do want to remind any potential motorists that the City of Kingston's winter parking restrictions are in effect. So as of January 1st, there is no overnight parking allowed anywhere in the City of Kingston. That will also remain in place throughout the month of February. In March, the parking restrictions are limited to nights when snowfall or ice accumulation is expected. So basically, come March, if there is a winter weather warning in effect, you will not be able to park on the street. January and February, you will not be able to park on the street, period. So bear that in mind if you're visiting loved ones, friends, or students here in the City of Kingston. Otherwise, there's nothing else to report. Construction off-season has begun. No major road closures or...
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. Kingston community organizations are working together to address intimate partner violence in KFLNA through a new awareness campaign. See It, Name It, Change It is an educational campaign encouraging community members to learn to identify harmful behaviors, call them out, and take safe, effective action. The working group behind the campaign came together in 2024, after City Council declared intimate partner violence an epidemic in the region in 2023. The group is comprised of Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Kingston Interval House, Resolve Counseling Services, Kingston Anti-Violence Advisory Council, Southeast Public Health, the City of Kingston, and United Way, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington. The local campaign features photographs of Kingston community members holding signs with the campaign slogan. The photographs, taken by local photographer Will O'Hare, feature an Indigenous elder, a musician, a paramedic, the medical officer of health, a trades worker, the local Canadian Forces Base Commander, a Correctional Services Canada Commissioner, an artist, and a Queen student. See It, Name It, Change It launched in conjunction with the Global 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, featuring the images and resources on social media and local digital displays. Ruth Nordegroff, Director of Community Development and Wellbeing and IIDEA at the City of Kingston, sat down with CFRC to share more about the campaign. For listeners who may not have heard of it yet, what is the See It, Name It, Change It campaign, and what is it aiming to do?
It's actually a campaign that was initially created in the Lanark County. So we are, you know, not that creative. We really build it off their initial campaign. And it's really focused on really education around intimate partner violence and really call people or support people to take action. Obviously, it kind of focuses on not only identifying, but also calling out, changing, and ultimately stopping intimate partner violence in our community.
Mm-hmm. And the campaign uses photographs of community members holding that message. I was wondering why this approach was chosen and what impact you guys are hoping it has.
Well, we want to make sure that it really feels as something that is, you know, touching everybody and everybody should be part of. So we choose, like, obviously some folks that people might recognize in our community. You know, we've chosen, you know, leaders of different institutions, musicians, artists, but also folks that that work in, you know, certain professions like healthcare, trades, education. So we really wanted to make it like diverse and touch on everybody and hopefully also really create some, I would say, recognition in the community around this and starting a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this has started in other cities. I was wondering if you could speak to why it was so important to bring this to Kingston now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually something that we've been working on over the last few years. Obviously, I work for the City of Kingston, and City Council back in 2023 actually declared intimate partner violence as an epidemic. There's about 100 municipalities that have done the same, and we're hopeful that at some point the province also will take that same approach. So we've, after that, really started to work on how do we bring all the partners together that work on preventing intimate partner violence and also supporting victims and members of the community. And we thought that this campaign would really be a good start to bring this message out in the community in an impactful way.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you've gotten any response, whether it's from folks who participated maybe in taking the pictures or folks who've seen the campaign.
Well, we launched it this week and we've definitely seen some responses on social media. People are really kind of picking this up in a positive way. What we really try to do as well is making sure that there's a link to resources. So if people see this campaign and they may want to learn more, that they actually go to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has a survivor handbook and lots of other tools for people to educate themselves. So yeah, we've overall seen some positive reactions. We've received some questions around resources for all genders. So it's really good dialogue and conversation.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And where can folks find more about this campaign, view all these pictures, and find resources?
Well, hopefully on as many social media platforms as possible. We really hope it's kind of this opportunity for people to share and reshare these photos. But the different partners that have been working on this are the City of Kingston, the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Interval House, Resolve, the Southeast Health Units, and the United Way. So all those agencies will have these resources on their websites. But ultimately, we really hope that folks are going to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has all the resources and tools.
Once again, that was Ruth Nordegroff with the City of Kingston on the See It, Name It, Change It campaign here in KFLNA. The working group hopes to expand the campaign to more locations in the coming months. For more information and resources, you can visit kfacc.org. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. On Friday, January 9th, there's trivia at Wild Wings Kingston at 7 p.m. Limestone City Burlesque and Harlequin Crow present Queeriversary 2 Louder and Prouder at the Broom Factory at 8 p.m. Later on, saddle up for country karaoke at the Buckle at 9 p.m. or keep things classic with karaoke at Daft Brewing, also at 9 p.m. On Saturday, January 10th, another opportunity to shop local at the Kingston Public Market, open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Springer Market Square. On Sunday, January 11th, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., a great stop for fresh food and local goods. In the evening, there's trivia at The Merchant at 8 p.m., followed by late-night karaoke at The Toucan at 10:30 p.m. Looking ahead to next week, on Monday, January 12th, familiar favorites return. Karaoke at Timeout Bar at 6 p.m., trivia at One Eye Jacks at 7, The Brass Pub at 7:45, and Something in the Water Brewing at 8. As for concerts, tonight is stacked with live music across the region. It starts early with Amanda Keeley Trio at the Cove Inn and Christopher Jackson at the Toucan, both at 5 p.m. At 6 p.m., catch Paul Wood and Laura Richards at Time Out. Over in Gananoque, the Peter Kopp Project with Scott Dwyer and Jay Gooden plays Stonewater Pub at 7. The night keeps rolling with Lowry at K&R Sports Bar at 8, Dana Person and Adam Nutbay at Hotel Wolf Island at 8:30, and a late show from Tonecats at The Merchant at 10:30 p.m. Tomorrow on Saturday, January 10th, is another big one. The afternoon starts with Matt Dixon at the Coven at 5 p.m. In the evening, you can catch Tom Savage and Friends at the Royal Canadian Legion 560 and Jeff Callery at the Embassy, both at 7 p.m. Rock fans can head to the Kingston Grand Theatre for Road Apples, the Tragically Hip tribute, at 7:30 p.m. Later on, there's Sedan Delivery at Hotel Wolf Island at 8:30, and Chris Bonham Carter closes out the night at The Merchant at 10:30 p.m. On Sunday, January 11th, music starts early with Youth Open Mic at the Broom Factory at 1 p.m., alongside Chicken Pickin' at the Cove Inn, also at 1 p.m. Classical fans can catch the Kingston Symphony Orchestra performing at the Isabel at 2:30 p.m. Later, enjoy Lady and the Tramps at Timeout at 3, Eric and Megan at the Coven at 5, and Open Mic with Steve G at Timeout at 7. That wraps up your Friday forecast. Once again, that was just some of the events and concerts coming up this weekend in the region. Be sure to head to cfrc.ca for our full events and concerts listings. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go, head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.